It's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Pro-Syrian government forces seized the rebel-held neighborhood of Farafrah near the old city in the center of Aleppo. It's the last major city in which the opposition has a firm grip. Days of intense fighting followed the collapse of a U.S.-Russian brokered ceasefire earlier this month. David Lesh is a Syria analyst at Trinity College in Texas.
The Syrian government and the Russians seem to have recognized early that the U.S.-Russian agreement really had very little chance of being successful in terms of a cessation of hostilities. And so they've prepared to engage in another offensive in Aleppo.
The U.S. and Russia held no talks on further diplomatic efforts Tuesday, but U.S. spokesman Mark Toner said Secretary of State John Kerry needs measures offered by Moscow and Damascus that will change the reality on the ground.
What's happening in Aleppo is unacceptable. We recognize that the cessation of hostilities is badly weakened and that we need to see proposals going forward on how to resuscitate this cessation of hostilities. And what the secretary talked about was reestablishing credibility in the process.
Reuters quotes a senior rebel official as saying pro-government forces are mobilizing near the rebel-held Sheikh Zayed district in the south of Aleppo. The fall of Aleppo would be viewed as a major victory for forces of President Bashar al-Assad. War crimes judges at The Hague Tuesday sentenced former Islamist rebel Ahmed al-Faqi al-Mahdi to 9 years in prison for damaging and destroying 10 14th-century mausoleums and religious sites in Mali. It's the first such international case involving the destruction of heritage sites in 2012 during the African country's coup, where al-Qaeda-backed jihadists took advantage in the north. This is VOA News. Former Israeli President and Prime Minister Shimon Peres died Wednesday at age 93 after suffering a major stroke 2 weeks ago. Peres, the last of the so-called founding fathers of the State of Israel, having had a public career that spanned 70 years. Joseph Olmert, political science professor at the University of South Carolina, said Peres, originally a hawk, tempered his views later in life despite changing Israeli attitudes.
Part of it may have had to do with the fact that in his lifetime, there was the big, political change in Israel, the demographic change, which led the Israeli public opinion from left to right. And he was left on the left side of politics.
Peres was co-recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize in 1994, forging peace with Palestinians under the so-called Oslo Accords. In a statement, President Obama praised him for never giving up on the possibility of peace. Somali radio journalist Abdelaziz Ali Haji, who worked for the Shabelle radio station in Mogadishu, was shot dead by unknown gunmen Tuesday. No immediate claim of responsibility. Haji, the 13th employee at Shabelle Radio, killed since 2007. 11 were gunned down, 2 others died in al-Shabaab suicide attacks. The 2 major party presidential candidates were back on the campaign trail Tuesday, 6 weeks before the November 8 U.S. election, a day after the first televised debate, viewed by more than 80 million people. Hillary Clinton met with supporters in North Carolina. Republican Donald Trump addressed thousands in Melbourne, Florida.
For 90 minutes, I watched her very carefully, and I was also holding back. I didn't want to do anything to embarrass her, but I watched her, and she was stuck in the past.
In North Carolina, Clinton attacked Trump for being, in her words, dangerously incoherent and not releasing his tax returns. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi canceled his appearance in November at a regional summit in Pakistan, reflecting heightened tensions over an uptick in violence in Kashmir. India blamed Islamabad for allowing militants to attack an Indian army post early this month that killed 18 soldiers. The 2 nuclear-armed rivals also disagree over a water treaty. A top U.S. official told U.S. lawmakers Tuesday the Obama administration plans to speed up deployment of the THAAD anti-missile system in South Korea to blunt the growing North Korean nuclear missile threat. Assistant Secretary of State Daniel Russell said he believes South Korea is firmly committed to deployment despite Chinese opposition. President Obama Tuesday nominated career diplomat Jeffrey De Laurentiis to be the first U.S. ambassador to Cuba in more than 5 decades. The nomination may be short-lived, since it must be approved by an opposition-controlled Senate, skeptical of normalized ties, and in an election year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. France announces support for Libya's united government.
Et même si Sirte était
Speaking to reporters alongside Libyan Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj, Hollande said terrorist groups are still operating in Libya and they must be hunted down and neutralized.
VAS correspondent Lisa Bryant in Paris, France. Somalia's presidential election has been postponed again. The DRC opposition welcomes a UN call for an investigation of this month's pre-election violence. And South Sudan has a new rebel movement to fight against President Salva Kiir's government.
The SSDM, or SSDA, is announcing that it shall from today join the struggle against the authoritarian tribalistic regime in Juba.
Colonel Philip Kadol is spokesman for the Cobra faction of the South Sudan Democratic Movement. Today is the anniversary of the 2009 stadium massacre in Guinea-Conakry. And Kenya rolls out a new child-friendly tuberculosis drug. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. French President François Hollande warned on Tuesday that Libya must not turn into another Syria, and he vowed to support the country's fragile unity government, whose prime minister is visiting Paris. Lisa Bryan has more from the French capital.
President Hollande saluted the push by Libyan forces to liberate the city of Sirte from Islamic State control, but he warned the fight against radical groups in the North African country is far from over.
Et même si Sirte était
Speaking to reporters alongside Libyan Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj, Hollande said terrorist groups are still operating in Libya and they must be hunted down and neutralized. Libya must not follow the example of Syria, the French president said, describing the scene in the Syrian city of Aleppo, hit by massive aerial bombardments in recent days, as a massacre. Hollande also backed Sarraj's efforts to expand his unity government, saying the interest of the international community is to have a stable and sure government. Libya's unity government suffered a recent setback when rival forces loyal to an eastern Libyan commander evicted Sarraj's allies from the North African country's oil ports. A recent British parliamentary report harshly criticized France and Britain for their military intervention in Libya in 2011, which it said helped bring on the country's political collapse and the rise of the Islamic State group. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Officials of South Sudan's Democratic Movement, or SSDM Cobra faction, formerly led by David Yao Yao, say they are once again waging war against President Salva Kiir's government. David Yao Yao signed a peace deal in May 2014, which granted the Greater Pibor area a semi-autonomous administrative status. He was then appointed deputy defense minister by President Kiir. But other SSDM Cobra faction leaders say the Kiir administration has abandoned the deal. Wakit Simon Wudu reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The new SSDM Cobra faction leader is Lieutenant General Khalid Boutros Bora, who was formerly third in command in the SSDM Cobra faction and was his group's chief negotiator. At a news conference in Nairobi, the SSDM accused the government of failing to fulfill the requirements in the agreement. Colonel Philip Kadal is the spokesman of the faction led by Boutros Bora.
The SSDM, or SSDA, is announcing that it shall from today join the struggle against the authoritarian tribalistic regime in Juba. Being conscious of the need to unify the ranks of all the forces opposed to the regime, SSDM/Cobra shall immediately enter serious dialogue with the like-minded patriotic forces already in the field of combat with the aim of cooperation, coordination, or merger.
Signed in March 2014, the peace agreement was brokered by the church led by retired Bishop Paride Taban. It marked an end to 4 years of conflict that left hundreds of people dead and destroyed property in the former jungle state. The deal created the Greater Pibor administrative area with a status similar to that of a state. Kadal says it also created a special fund to improve basic needs in the area and gave the indigenous people the right to manage the land and its resources.
The provisions which made people not to be happy and they were never being implemented, these were the things like the first, the nomination of the Cobra faction members to lead or to administer Greater Bibor was not honored, like the position of presidential advisor, which was supposed to be in place. And the other provisions we had actually the road, which was supposed to link to Juba to Bibor area, but it has never been built. And instead, the government has decided to instill people who were not Cobras, but people of their own interest to continue with their games of suppression and oppressions of the locals.
Kadal says Yao Yao has decided to join the government and dump the agreement altogether despite little being achieved. Akol Paul Kordit, the Deputy Minister of Information, strongly denies the charges.
The allegations that the government dumped the agreement and that the agreement was never implemented are false, and this has to be made clear to them that if at all this new phenomenon where everybody, anyone decides to rebel, even if you are an individual, would hope that after rebellion you'll be sworn in and given a public office. This is a bad culture.
Kordit says President Salva Kiir promoted some of the forces of the Cobra faction to high ranks in the SPLA, including the current opposition leader. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
A member of the coalition of leading opposition parties known as Rassemblement in the Democratic Republic of Congo is welcoming a call for an independent investigation into the spiraling violence that has engulfed the country in recent weeks. The UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights on Monday said an independent, transparent, and credible investigation is needed to bring the perpetrators and instigators of the violence to justice. About 53 people were killed, including 4 police officers, and as many as 127 wounded. Government spokesman Lambert Mende told VOA the opposition is to blame for employing young thugs, mostly on drugs, to loot and destroy property. But Martin Fayulu says if the government really believes the opposition started the violence, then it must accept an independent probe.
We agree on that position because all of us who we are asking for an independent investigation, including the investigation from the ICC, because what's happened here is something that is not acceptable at all. You have militaries, you have soldiers with guns, and the shooting the civilian, it's not possible. We want an inquiry to find who said to those militaries, those soldiers, to shoot the opposition.
When we talked last time, I mentioned to you that the Minister of Information, Lambert Mende, was blaming you, the opposition, of provoking the violence.
Yeah, but what you have to do now to accept the investigation and to see who provoked violence. We were peacefully demonstrating. We didn't have anything, any gun. And there are videos everywhere here now showing that they are the one. But instead of talking, what all of us have to do is to accept the investigation. That, I think, is simple.
The opposition is protesting about the delay in holding the election. The DRC Justice and Human Rights Minister also told the UN Council that Kabila is not trying to violate the constitution. He said that the elections will be organized.
I can't understand. What does he mean? He doesn't want to violate the election, but why we are not having election this year? The constitution says that every 5 years you have to have a presidential election. Why this year, 2016, we don't have election? No, I think they think that everybody is mad. It's all Congolese. They are not intelligent. I think that's not the way to handle the matter. Everybody knows that Mr. Kabila wants to stay in power. Everybody knows that Mr. Kabila is multiplying the action for him to not have election in this country. Everybody knows that Mr. Kabila is trying to get all these guys from the Electoral Commission in his pocket. Everybody knows that Mr. Kabila here is even trying to buy people from the opposition. That's clear. But now everybody knows that also Congo has a constitution, and that constitution says that Mr. Kabila has to leave power on December 19, 2016. And the people of Congo, that they are decided that it will be like that. The youth have written to Mr. Kabila to tell him that no young guy will accept that Mr. Kabila stay in power over December 19 this year. I don't know if people in this world, they understand what the Congolese want. I can tell you, even we as a politician, we are far behind the population. The population is ahead. The population has made it clear that nothing that will let Mr. Kabila to stay in power after December 19 this year.
So, Mr. Fayulu, what happens now? What is the opposition? Are you done with the protests, or you are still going to hold another rally?
We have already said that Mr. Kabila has a PRV, this notice for cancellation. And you'll see what will happen. Demonstration will take place, and we have many things to do. In the Rassemblement, we'll be having our a closed meeting this week. And after that closed meeting, we'll tell you what will happen.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Today's Wednesday, September 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 and a half minutes past the hour. In an unprecedented decision, the International Criminal Court on Tuesday convicted a Muslim extremist of destroying centuries-old religious shrines in Mali. It is the first time that the Hague Court has treated such destruction as a war crime, sentencing Ahmed Al-Faqi Al-Mahdi to 9 years in prison. Timbuktu is a United Nations World Heritage Site. Ahmed Mahdi faced as much as 30 years in prison, but the court said it took into account his admission of guilt and regret, along with his plea to other Muslims not to do what he did. Somalia's elections, which were slated to begin last weekend, have been postponed again. The government now says the poll won't start until later October. Jason Pantinki has more from Mogadishu.
Somalia's parliamentary elections have been pushed to October 23rd. The presidential vote has been rescheduled for November 30th. The internationally backed process has been beset by problems. There is political wrangling over voter delegates. National and state authorities complain the international community hasn't given pledged funding. Meanwhile, crucial institutions such as a dispute resolution commission remain unformed. Adam Ibrahim Al-Hirsi, the justice minister of Jubaland State, said the delays are no surprise.
The capacity of the people that promised that they will get things done should have been doubted from day one. Everybody knew this wasn't happening on time because the push from the international community, especially to those who deal with Somalia from diplomatic offices, wanted something great to report to their respective countries that wasn't in sync with the reality on the ground.
But the elections will still represent a major gain for Somalia when they do happen, says presidential spokesperson Dawood Awais.
Although this is not going to be a direct election, but it's a first step. This is a country which has not held elections for 47 years. Many people in this country, if you talk about them about the elections, they even don't know how to cast their votes.
Technically, Somalia held a presidential poll in 2012 when parliament elected President Hassan Mohamud. But it's true there hasn't been a poll of the people since the 1960s. This year's polls won't be a one-person, one-vote process. Due to security concerns, 14,000 delegates will vote for parliament. The new parliament will then choose the president. Joe Contreras, spokesperson for the United Nations Assistance Mission in Somalia, says this model isn't ideal. But he says it is better than the 2012 poll when only 135 clan elders voted.
I don't think that anyone is calling this a democratic election in the sense that most of us think of a democratic election.
Yet already this small electoral process has been hampered by accusations of misconduct. Opposition candidate Abdurrahman Abdishakur Warsame says the government is undermining other candidates, including tearing down his campaign posters.
The government is still trying to use the state resources and state security apparatus and state money and state institutions for advancing one particular candidate, which is the incumbent president.
The government denies that accusation. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Mogadishu.
Ali Bongo Ondimba has been sworn in as Gabon's president for a second seven-year term after winning re-election by a slim margin in a disputed vote. At the swearing-in on Tuesday, Bongo vowed to defend the constitution and to be fair to all. He called for political dialogue, but opposition candidate Jean Ping rejected the offer, accusing Bongo's ruling party of vote rigging. Wednesday marks the anniversary of the 2009 stadium massacre in Conakry, Guinea, where more than 150 protesters were killed and more than 100 women raped by security forces. Despite progress that has been made by the Guinea Investigative Forces that was launched in 2010, local human rights groups say justice has still not fully been served. Human Rights Watch's Associate Director for West Africa talks to Reiki Stryak about what still must be done in the case.
Well, indeed, a great deal of progress in investigating the events of September 28, 2009 has been made by the panel of three Guinean judges, which was assigned to address the investigation for this case. There have been over 400 victims, witnesses, and their families who have been interviewed, and at least 10 individuals, including numerous high-level security force officials who have been indicted. So there indeed has been progress. Guinean government appears to have increasing political will to ensure justice for this case. However, much work needs to be done before the victims and their families can see justice done in this case.
And can you tell me about what work needs to still be done?
There still is work to be done. There are over 100 victims whose bodies have yet to be found and are believed to be buried in mass graves in and around Conakry. Furthermore, there are several key witnesses and suspects who remain to be questioned. We're asking the Guinean authorities to fulfill their commitment to finish this investigation and to bring this case to trial, because doing so will greatly increase the trust that Guineans have in their government to ensure that a meaningful step has been taken to end impunity.
What is the risk that low-level officers pay the price for these crimes while the higher-level officers walk free?
Well, indeed, in this investigation, it's encouraging some of the people who have been indicted. In this case, there have been a number of high-level officials who have been questioned and indicted, not least Moussa Dadis Camara, the former leader of the National Council of Democracy and Development, the junta which was in power at the time, as well as his vice president. And that really encourages both Guineans who have for so long suffered from impunity by members of the security forces.
And why has this process taken so long? Why is the judiciary process in Guinea often so difficult? Are there a lack of judges? What are the systematic issues in the Guinean judicial system?
President Condé, when he took office, inherited a judiciary which had been neglected and politicized for years. It lacked independence necessary to ensure justice for ordinary Guineans. So there has been some progress made. There is a judicial reform process that is in the process of being implemented.
That was Corinne Dufka, Human Rights Watch's Associate Director for West Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Washington, D.C. This week, Kenya becomes the first country in the world to roll out child-friendly tuberculosis medicines nationwide. The improved treatment was first unveiled at a conference in South Africa last year, and experts say it will improve survival rates for children. Lenny Ruvaga has the story from Nairobi.
12-year-old Ryan Mutigo has been taking a cocktail of tuberculosis medicine ever since he can remember. Today in Nairobi, he is all smiles. Kenya's government has just launched a child-friendly TB medicine which dissolves in water, making it easier for kids to take.
Most children are not able to take in those pills, and when they are crushed, most of the particles are not taken, and that they have not taken the full dose.
Until now, health workers have had to cut up bitter-tasting pills to get the right doses for kids. The Global TB Alliance says that has contributed to treatment failure and death in children. The new TB medicine tastes sweet. It comes in flavors like strawberry.
It's easy, friendly, and tasty, nice, and I think all children will be happy for it. TB is treatable. No child should die of TB.
Tuberculosis is an infectious bacterial disease that affects the lungs. It is preventable and curable, but the World Health Organization says in 2014, TB infected 1 million children worldwide and killed 140,000. Kenya's Ministry of Health recorded 7,000 cases of TB in children and infants last year. The child-friendly medicines will be offered for free in Kenya starting the 1st of October, and Dr. Enos Massini of the Ministry of Health told VOA the government will ensure it will reach those in need.
We've had challenges in childhood TB control. Access to this formulation for our children is going to be possible. We're going to ensure that more children who are diagnosed to have TB are able to access, are able to be initiated on this new formulation.
But advocates say other hurdles exist. Irene Kamau is the Executive Director of Action Now Kenya.
We still have a challenge. We have the medication, but it's not all the children, especially those from the poor backgrounds, that will access the medicine because they may not have proper diagnosis or the basis that they need to pay for the chest X-ray.
The development of the improved child-friendly treatment took 3 years. It was funded by UNITAID, a global health initiative, which gave the TB Alliance a grant of $16 million. So far, 20 other countries have ordered the child-friendly medicines and are planning to roll them out in their respective areas. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Egyptian salvage workers on Tuesday pulled the bodies of dozens of migrants from the hold of a sunken fishing boat in the coastal Mediterranean, raising the toll from the September 21st disaster to more than 200 dead. That's it for this Wednesday, September 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, a conversation with Arthur Opio Oloya about his book, Black Hawks Rising, the story of AMISOM's successful war against Somali insurgency. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.